This invitation was such a blessing to me. I'm very, very grateful to be here, and this is my first time at Shrinemont, so I have Shrinemont envy for all of you who have been coming here for so many years. Can't hear me? I'm actually mic'd. Can you hear it? Is this working? Yeah. It's working. Okay. I would love to know who's out there. I heard there's a variety of different people. So how many are spouses? Great. And professional church staff? Okay. The echo chamber is leaving me. And then clergy? Okay. Thanks. Well, as you may or may not know, the topic for today is Bowen theory and the elephant in the room. And so I welcome you aboard the travel bus for that topic. I'd like to start off with a blessing from John O'Donohue, who wrote a book called To Bless the Space Between Us. It's called For a New Beginning. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered, heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plenitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will be home in a new rhythm. For your soul senses the world that awaits you. Oops. Somebody gave me a tip about what happens to the brain from a long day, from a ride out here, from a fried chicken dinner, maybe with a little wine, and then dim lights. So I thought it might be interesting to do some brain gym exercises to awaken the brain. How's that? Is this any better? Oh, good.
Thanks for your patience.
Yeah. So anyway, if you would stand, we're going to do some exercises called brain gym. And these are exercises that you can actually do without calling too much attention to yourself in meetings, and I do them all the time. So the first one is for the ears, and it's to increase listening comprehension. So you just open up the flaps of the top of your ears and massage all the way down to the tips of your ears, and do that three times. Opening up those nice flaps, down to the bottom, and then up again. So then the second is called brain buttons, and you take your middle finger and your thumb and place it on your collarbone, and then just drop down into the divots below your collarbone, and then this hand rests on your belly button, which is a grounding point, or you can actually put your fingers in your belly button if you like, and then just rotate those fingers
around in those little divots. And you can go clockwise, and then you can go counterclockwise. One builds energy, the other releases energy. So this actually brings more blood into the brain. The brain loves oxygen. So anytime you find tonight that you're starting to fade, you can revisit those if you'd like. So I use them all the time, and I find that if I start, there's actually another series that are part of this, but I find if I start the morning, my concentration is better and my focus is better, if I can remember to do them. And then sometimes later in the day, if I'm fatigued, I'll do them again. So those are for you. So please, if you would, have a seat. I have to say the energy is wonderful to be here in this room. It's very visible and it's very much felt. So it's a pleasure to be with all of you. I really love being with clergy. One time when I was presenting to clergy as part of Ed's leadership program, I said, you know, all of you clergy are so much more open than mental health professionals. And somebody raised his hand and he said, that's because we're so desperate. So desperate leads to openness. It's wonderful. So, marvelous and mysterious God, this was the lovely beginning of a prayer by one of your own who happens to be here tonight. And marvelous and mysterious relationships will be part of what we'll talk about today. The relationships with self, with other, and with God. And the relationship with elephants. So for some of you who are farther away, this is an elephant sitting with his shrink, and he says, I'm right there in the room, and no one even acknowledges me. Is worried about itself, so I hear. Uncertainty stirs people up unlike anything else. And of course, it's a condition of life. A clergy person wrote, this anxiety is a presence, an elephant in the room. It then gets expressed in the congregation in a variety of different ways. Another clergy person wrote, another elephant in the room may be that people expect relationships to be different when they go to church, peaceful and loving, not like the outside world. And it is very disheartening to discover otherwise. And I think also disheartening for clergy that I hear is the nastiness that sometimes comes to both church staff and clergy, which is hard to receive. A neighbor of mine, a longtime attendee of an Episcopal church, recently quit going because of all of the arguing going on about issues. So it's not an issue that she's leaving for, but it's all the anxiety and the arguing about it that moved her away from church. The elephant in the room is such a powerful, important topic. How might looking into these elephants draw people to church and deepen the experience of church for clergy and for congregations? When churches or people are willing to look at their part, it is a new beginning. And that's one of Murray Bowen's favorite questions to ask people, what's your part in this process? And I have to say, there are some people who sniff out that mention of self-responsibility, and they are never seen again. The practice of Bowen theory can bring some equilibrium and some fun too, creating an emotional raincoat. These elephants that live in all families, in all churches, and in ourselves can humble and teach. Moving elephants back into the wild where they belong can bring a flow and new energy, making life richer and easier. I'd like to tell a story about a man that I met when I took an organizational course many years ago at George Washington University. Has anyone heard of the Abilene Paradox? Few people? Well, Jerry Harvey wrote that, and he was the professor. So he tells this story about how he and his in-laws are relaxing, playing dominoes, and drinking lemonade on a hot Texas day. It was 104 degrees, and there was a dust storm swirling around, and they were just relaxing under a circulating fan. So his father-in-law said, "Hey, how about if we all drive to Abilene to have dinner?" And Jerry thinks to himself, "Drive 53 miles in a 1958 Buick without any air conditioning? I'm really happy right here." Well, his wife piped up and said, "Great, Dad, I'd love to go." And Jerry said, "Well, how about your mother?" Mother says, "Sure, I'd love to go." So he said four people got in the car on a hot, dusty day, 104 degrees, and they drive to a cafeteria in Abilene, have a terrible dinner, and get back in the car and drive hot all the way home. 4 hours later, they arrive home, and they return to sitting at the Domino's table, and there is silence. And so Jerry says at some point, "Well, that was a nice evening." And his wife said, "Well, to tell you the truth, I really didn't want to go. I was perfectly happy here playing dominoes and drinking lemonade." The mother said, "Well, I didn't really want to go either. I just thought everybody else wanted to go." And the father-in-law who suggested it said, "Well, I really didn't want to go either. I just suggested it because everybody looked bored." So you have four people who get in the car, drive to Abilene, and nobody wanted to go. So I suspect all of us have driven to Abilene at points in time, yes? Yes. Church work is an anchor for humans, for the world, and I have all respect and appreciation for the work that you do and for the spouses and children that support it. It is strenuous work, and I sure hear about that. David White, the poet and organizational consultant, writes that all work, there they are, the dominoes, the lemonade, and the dusty hot road. So David White writes that all work consists of these cycles of visitation and absence, which was interesting to read. And perhaps there are moments, and more than moments, of absence that can contribute to the birth of elephants and those human blind spots that we all have, the inner elephants. He says being human comes with being stuck and completely absent. It is the way we are made. David White thinks that part of work is to acknowledge the impossibility of it. Ed Friedman, a leadership consultant, and we'll talk a little more about who he is, spoke to 2,000 psychotherapists one day. He said to them, "For all your efforts, little will come." I was stunned to hear that, and I thought, oh my God, how is that going to be received? I watched as 2,000 people walked out the door with so much greater lightness. He had touched on the truth they lived with. Of course, church work may be different. Tonight and tomorrow, I'll be using a theory of relationships. It is called Bowen Family Systems Theory. And I just wanted to use that genogram just to give you a sense of a system. It has actually become well known in the Episcopal Church, and I think the Episcopal Church probably has the deepest connection of all the denominations. So it's a really special relationship. I figured out something about the theory in preparing for this. What came to me is that Bowen theory is about accessing the deep wisdom that lives in all of us. This is one of the biggest gifts of Bowen theory. It acknowledges that all of us can be a resource to ourselves, which is really a special thing. So I was asked to give a brief summary of this theory. The theory was actually introduced to clergy in 1985 by a man named Ed Friedman, and Ed was actually coached from the fountain of the source of this theory, Murray Bowen, who created it. So in 1985, Ed wrote this book for clergy on generation to generation, and Ed loved to ask audiences these two questions. How many of you have a copy of Generation to Generation? And then the second question he really loved to ask, and how many of you have read it? He was so tickled with himself for asking that question. Okay. So when this book was published in 1985, Ed started getting calls from all over the country. And some said to him, "Now I understand what's been coming at me." And others said, "This is what's happening. What do I do now?" So it was at that point that Ed started his leadership training program in clergy, for clergy. There is a rumor out there about a bumper sticker, and the bumper sticker supposedly reads, "Rabbi Jesus saved my soul. Rabbi Jesus saved my ass." Oh, where is it? Anybody seen it? I have not. Somebody maybe made that up. Some may be familiar with Ed Friedman and Bowen theory. Here's a little bit of background. The theory was a very new way to think. It was radical back in the 60s. The theory was developed by Dr. Murray Bowen in the 60s. He was a psychiatrist at Georgetown and was one of the co-founders of the family therapy movement at the time, which also was a radical development. At that time, the focus in psychiatry was on the inner workings of the individual, and not much attention was paid to the effects of relationships. So as part of the research that Bowen did at the National Institutes of Mental Health, he hospitalized schizophrenics and their families. That was radical. And as a result of this, Bowen was able to observe the intricate, complex interactions among family members that no one else had really seen. And so his theory came from these observations. And the usual response that people have in hearing this theory is to say, "Of course, this makes sense. We live this. We know this." So here are some of the ideas that he came up with, and I think you'll have the same kind of reaction. There he is. So the first one is such an obvious one that everybody is part of a larger system. Each person is influencing and being influenced by everyone else in the system. And if you've ever been to a family gathering, there may be some observations about that. And then in addition, the larger system itself has this energy to it, and that is affecting everybody in the system. This is true for families, and of course it's true for churches. And so one of the ways to think about this is that a single blade of grass is much more understandable when you see it within the larger context of a lawn. The second, Bowen noticed is that there was a variation in functioning among human beings from the more mature and less anxious to the less mature and more anxious. And I'm sure you have some stories about things that you have observed in that variation. Then the third is that he noticed that there were patterns from the multi-generational transmission process that were operating in the present. And number four, there are forces that draw one to be a separate self, and there are forces that draw one to be part of a relationship. Those are called the forces of separation and togetherness. A key ability in life is figuring out how to be a self in the midst of these togetherness forces while you're in relationships. So figuring out how to be a self at the same time in being in a relationship. Bowen called this self-differentiation, which is actually a term from cell biology, where the chromosomes separate and differentiate into two different cells. So this was interesting to hear. A separated woman discovered that her husband was driving their four-year-old child under the influence of drugs. And she came in and she said, "You know, I figured out something today. It's really easy to be differentiated when you're by yourself." Oh, yes. And so the next six has to do with symptoms will occur when the separateness and togetherness forces, the balance of those forces, is disturbed. Disturbances in this balance can occur from a death, a birth, an important member of the church leaving. Two cousins actually got sick 6 months after their grandmother moved to Florida, and the grandmother was a great gathering point for the family. And even smaller things can disturb this balance. A husband gets depressed when his wife gets preoccupied at work, stirring up his feelings of being left out. And then lastly, I'll just mention triangles a little bit. When a two-person system becomes uncomfortable, the most uncomfortable will recruit a third person, forming a triangle. So an example of this might be two parents who are having an argument together, and then later one brings up the fact that their son isn't doing their homework, and they shift the focus from the argument that they were having to focusing on the kid. And this lowers anxiety, at least temporarily, because it spreads that anxiety over a bigger geographic area. And I think about the difference between trying to sit on a two-legged stool and a three-legged stool. It's just easier, and that's what triangles offer us. So Bowen theory is a map. It helps people understand emotional process and sometimes the mysterious reactivity in relationships, in their families, and in their churches. Some church people have described it as lifting up out of the fog, saying, "Now I see things." The practice of Bowen theory offers a lantern to guide one through life. A journey without a map can offer some surprises and some challenges. The use of theory invites a different way to see, to think, to lead, and to function. Using theory positions one differently. From the mountain top, the view is bigger and different. This new information can invite more thoughtful, less reactive, wiser, and more creative responses to the challenges of relationships. Bowen theory contains two important kernels. One is the lowering of anxiety. Bowen thought a project like this would offer just a huge contribution into a relationship or into a situation. And then the second is about being more of a self, and Bowen called this self-differentiation. One of the biggest challenges for a human being is to figure out how to bring life energy to the self while at the same time bringing it to other relationships and everyone else. That's self-differentiation, figuring that out. And it is a lifetime journey. So if any of you are fading with the effects of your dinner, you may want to treat your ears to some stimulation, help yourself. Or if you'd rather just sleep through this, that is perfectly okay as well. There's a lot happening in sleep, and apparently ideas go into sleep and dreams, so that's fine too. Well, there's this interesting little video that a clergy person did on Ed Friedman's theory of self-differentiation, so I thought we could take a look at that now. It's about 6 minutes, and it's actually on a site, right, Julie? So you can take a look at this afterwards. Some of the print in it is really little, so people in the back may not be able to see the words, but I think you'll be able to hear it well, and that will bring you something.